Welcome to Veterans Voices UK, the podcast where we share the stories of British military veterans from across the generations. In each episode, we bring you the voices of those who've served our country, from the heroes on the battlefields of the Second World War to those who fought in more recent conflicts. But these aren't just war stories, they're stories of life and the profound impact that service have had on those who've lived through it. I'm Matt Lim, and today I'm grateful to share a chat I recently had with Jasmine Baron Harris, better known to everybody as Jazz. I first met Jazz some time ago as she was preparing for her deployment on Operation Herrick, the name that's been given to all the British military operations during the war in Afghanistan. But what makes Jazz's story truly special is her role as a military working dog handler, deploying with an exceptional team of highly trained dogs, who together played a vital role in a challenging operation. But Jazz's journey started long before her army service. She was simply following a lifelong dream of working with dogs, a passion that began at a very early age. In this episode, we'll journey through Jazz's early life growing up in Cornwall, where her love for dog was nurtured by her grandfather. We'll then follow her through her formative years and her decision to join the army and a promising military career that was suddenly dramatically cut short, forcing her to rethink and have a new look and find a different path in life. Thank you for listening to Veterans Voices UK. Now let's hear from Jazz as she takes us back to her early years growing up in Cornwall, where that incredible journey began.
I was born in a small village called Mevergizzy down in Cornwall. I was born in 1990, so a 90s child. My dad at the time was a postman and my mum ran a garage. And I spent most of my kind of pre-school years running around fields and causing trouble on fishing boats and helping my gramps out because my parents were working full time. I've got a little sister. She still lives in the village along with my parents. Yeah, my primary school was in the local village and it was a small little community school. And then secondary school, we head off up the road to St Austell, which is a local town, which was a bit of a culture shock because it's much bigger. But yeah, school wasn't overly of interest to me when I was younger. I was busy running around outside being feral. So we always had a family dog. So we usually had a Labrador or a German Shepherd and stuff in my house. But my paps was a gun dog trainer. We used to handle dogs on shoots and go and work the pens and stuff through the summer. So yeah, he always had 2 to 5 dogs when I was growing up. So I kind of fell into it that way and spent a lot of time with him and training dogs and had my first dog all to myself when I was quite young. Probably about 5-ish, I think, he bought me my own dog. It was one that someone said it was worth a pound a leg, maybe a fiver if its tail's any use. A little Springer Spaniel, something that I could do all by myself, and it was something I could make all by myself into whatever I wanted. But the deal was I had to feed it, walk it, and do everything with it. There was no bones about it, really. It just had to be mine, and I had to deal with it. So I had to walk down the road every day and sort it out for myself. I did quite a lot of picking up and stuff with her when I was younger. Did a little bit of beating with her, but my recall probably needed a little bit of work. But she did really, really well. When she passed away, when she was a little bit older, I didn't have her for all that long because she was, like I say, a bit of a second-hand dog. I got my second dog and I did field trials and things with him. He lasted to the grand old age of 15, but he retired when I joined the army initially. So, yeah, we did quite a lot of competitions and stuff with him, scurries and trials and junior trials and things like that. Even my pet dogs that were in my house had some form of job, even if it was they're a bit of a spare for the beating line or whatever. It's kind of, they all had a bit of a purpose in life. My paps was pretty kind of old school in how he did things. Dogs lived outside in kennels and they weren't kind of a companion, they were a work buddy more than anything. So yeah, it was more working dogs that I was brought up with and dogs that had a purpose. My paps was in the Navy during the war. His brother, my great uncle, was in the army just after the war. My dad did a little bit of time in the territorial. Granddads and great granddads, both sides, have all been army mostly. And yeah, we've got quite a long history of being in the military, and it's something that interested me quite a lot when I was younger. Not really sure why, if I'm honest, but like, I've quite liked the military since I was young. I was in the army cadets and things when I was younger, but I always wanted to do something in the military. But when I first looked at it, I didn't really know anything about dog handlers in the military, and initially was looking at the King's Troop Raw Horse Artillery, I was looking at the RMP. It wasn't until one of the keepers on my shoot told me about the Royal Army Veterinary Corps that I was like, oh, I can do dogs and be in the army. There we go. That's probably the path for me. So I had to wait till I was just a bit over 16. So I had to go to college for a year first and then dropped out of college and joined the army. When I first tried to join, I was deferred, which is why I ended up going to college for a year. I had asthma as a child, and my mum used to do that really great thing. When you go on holiday, she orders all the medications ever. So they deemed that I was still asthmatic, even though I'd had not had asthma for years, but because I'd had prescriptions for inhalers, they deemed I was asthmatic. So I was deferred for, I think it was 12 months or so, which worked in my favour because it meant that when I reapplied 12 months later, then I could go straight for the second selection part for the Royal Army Veterinary Corps and got in that way. But my dad was chuffed, like really excited that I was going. My mum was terrified and had to think long and hard about signing my paperwork because I was under 18 and needed her permission. But she did eventually. Unfortunately, my paps had passed away by that point, but my gran, she was super happy, well chuffed. She wrote to me every day, I think, when I first went. At the time, women had to do an extra bit of basic training, the soldiers' preconditioning course, to see if they could help some of the injuries that women were getting in training. So I had to go 3 weeks early before I actually started basic training. So hopped on a train at St Austell. Everybody waved me off and off I went as a little, I think I was about just under 17, I think. So I was quite young. But yeah, off I went. But I was quite used to it. I went on army camps and stuff, like cadet camps on my own, so I was kind of used to going away. I think my parents were a bit more of a mess than I was at that point. I hopped off the train. I think I had about three changes to get there. I'd never really been on the train, especially for long distances, so it was a bit weird for me. But I got off the train near Purbright somewhere. I can't remember which the station actually is. There was a few other girls I'd met on the way on the train up, one from Devon and I think one from Dorset or somewhere. We all kind of got off and it was a bit of a weird thing. We all just stand in ranks and carry our luggage and stuff in ranks, which was a bit weird because I understood obviously about drill and all that sort of stuff from cadets, but doing it in civilian clothing and a suit as well because we had to be smartly dressed was really odd, and trying to do drill with a suitcase was really strange. But yeah, we got into the older part of Purbright, the bit that hadn't kind of been developed and stuff, so we had the big 16-man rooms and all that sort of stuff. And I think the first two or three nights I spent going, what the hell have I done? Because we were just doing PT all the time because it was the soldiers' preconditioning course. It was just relentless PT. And then when I phoned my dad, I said, I want to come home, and he hung up on me. I was like, well, I'm stuck here now. So I guess that was where I stayed and went through it. So yeah, basic training was lovely for 17 weeks instead of 14 because we had to do PT for 3 weeks. I think we had a weekend off in between, if I remember rightly, but that was about it. And then went up to Melton. We had, because the boys were coming off of a different basic training because it was split gender in basic training, I think I had to lurk around for like a couple of weeks. So just kind of helped with cleaning kennels and minced about a little bit. And yeah, the sort of waiting around a little bit, I kind of got to see Melton and get around a little bit. And then, yeah, we did, I think it was 4 weeks back then, the basic dog handler course. Patrol dog handler, just, I got given some enormous German Shepherd cross thing that had been in Northern Ireland and was just huge and literally weighed more than I did. I had a second dog as well, and I can't remember why I had two dogs. I think it was because one was rubbish at obedience and the other one was rubbish at bite work, so I ended up with two dogs going through my course. They just happened to be enormous. But yeah, and then passed out of that, well, 4 weeks later, I guess. And then I went on my drive-in in an engineer camp down south somewhere. The military's got a number of different classifications of military working dog. Got patrol dogs, which are your biting dogs, your protection dogs. You've got vehicle search dogs, which is generally gun dog breeds. There's the arms and explosive search dogs, which are kind of a free-running search dog that finds weapons and explosives. And that was kind of the core three that we had when I initially joined. And the armed and explosive search dogs are kind of where all the handlers want to get to. And that's kind of known as the pinnacle kind of trade, if you want, within the vet corps. And that was the bit that interested me, because it was basically a gun dog that found stuff. And that's kind of where I was aiming for. But I did really enjoy patrol dog, and I stayed with patrol dogs quite a long time intentionally, because it was something different. I'm working with different breeds than I was used to. And I really enjoyed my time on protection, to be fair. Although I was on protection for quite a while, just before my first Afghan tour, I was put on a vehicle search course where I was teamed with a big old Springer Spaniel. His name was Deck. And I ended up with him, I think, just because everybody else hated him. And he was a bit grouchy and a bit cranky, but I really like a bit of personality in my dogs. And then after my deployment with him, we came back. I was posted to Germany, and then immediately before I'd even touched base in Germany, I was put on my arms and explosive search course, which I didn't get a dog from. I had a course dog throughout course. But when I got back to regiment, my sub major at the time said that there was a failed dog that had come out of Melton, that because I was a gun dog trainer previously, that I could fix, and that would be my dog for my next tour. So I ended up with another Springer Spaniel, who, weirdly, I didn't deploy with in the end. I got him to standard and licensed with him, and we did quite a few exercises, a couple with the infantry and down on Salisbury Plain and Thetford. But just on the run-up to tour, as we were kind of getting ready to go, I was put on my IE3D course, and that was for a long-range search dog, which were all Labradors. I was put forward for that, so I ended up going on that, and after that course, again, still didn't get a dog. Got to theatre the second time and hadn't even been told what role I was doing until I got out there. And when I finished my in-theatre training, my sergeant major asked which one I would prefer to do. And I said, AES, because I'm stronger at it and I understand it better and I've done it for longer, which is where I got my third Spaniel. Ended up touring with a dog, an air dog, actually. He was the RAF's, named Ronnie, who looked like a weird little sheep. And was a whole different version of Strange Spaniel. But he served me well, bless him. So when I came off my vehicle search course, we went straight into pre-deployment training, which would have been 2009, ready to deploy in 2010, I think. Me and Deck were getting ready. A lot of handlers had two dogs at that point, because VS handlers had two dogs because of the workload they have. But I didn't get mine initially, because Deck was a problem child. I was pretty grateful for that. Very, very good search dog. Rubbish dog. But yeah, so did all of my pre-deployment training with him. One of the exercises I remember was down in Thetford, where he found stuff in vehicles that he wasn't meant to find because it wasn't meant to be there. So I knew his nose was good to go and he was working well. We had Family's Day, I think about a week or so before we deployed, and then went out on a C-17, deployed to Afghan for 7 months, because we do in-theatre training for kind of a month, getting ready to go onto the ground and stuff with basic soldiering skills and getting the dogs ready and acclimatised and all that good stuff. Picked up my second dog when I got into theatre, who was a AES dog previously, been put back to VS, who initially was my much stronger dog and a lot easier to work with because Tech was a problem child. But it turned out that because of his previous tour experience, he was actually pretty gun-shy. So when I went out on one of my first jobs with him, he just wouldn't work. So I had to come back, swap dogs, and go back out again. And Deck ended up as kind of my number one man for most of the tour. So kind of a typical day in Afghan, when we're forward anyway, was kind of get up, make sure the dog's toileted. They're generally in a flight box next to us in our bed space. Get up, sort the dog, usually in my pyjamas. Take him out, walk him around a little bit, make sure they're all toileted. Get him fed, and then get myself sorted. Go and have some breakfast, come back, toilet him again, and then usually by that point orders are starting and we're finding out what we're doing for that day. Some days we don't do anything, we just sort of wait around on standby, but some days we're going out and doing sort of targeted checkpoints and stuff. And then kind of the same in reverse towards the end of the day, have evening meal, make sure the dog's sorted. The days that we're not really doing anything, we're not patrolling, we're generally training, doing some sort of something just to keep the dog occupied and make sure they're busy. But we try and give them as much kind of dog time as they can, so they're not just constantly working. We give them a bit of free rein and have a good old play with them as well. Got to make sure they're groomed and things like that as well. And in the desert, their skin gets very dry and full of dust, and especially on a winter tour when it rains, they get all clagged up and kind of filthy, so got to make sure they're all groomed out and looked after. But Deck was generally fairly easy because nobody else wanted to bother with him, so he wasn't a very popular dog because it was horrible. But He was fairly easy. He was quite chill to have around camp. But he did mellow a bit towards the end of my tour, and some of the guys managed to make friends with him after a while. And he always got extra sausages. There was always extra sausages that would appear from nowhere. One particular day that I probably remember the best is I was forward on the ground, which for a VSL was pretty rare. Most of them were working the main entry point at Camp Bastion and the side gate as well. But I volunteered to go forward for whatever bizarre reason. That was a good idea. And I had Deck with me, and we went out on a VCP and stopping vehicles. We stopped a vehicle my dog had indicated, and the very Afghani looking man in the front seat spoke to me in very good English and told me I hadn't found anything and to carry on. And it turned out that they were some of the embedded forces, and my dog had found about 400 link under the back seat that he wasn't meant to find. So that was a very strange day, but it took the boss to have a conversation with said guy in the front seat for me to understand what the hell was going on at the time. Deck was very proud of himself, but it was a really odd day. The VOs and the vet techs and things, we didn't really see much of them. There was generally only kind of one vet in theatre, and they were in Bastion, so if something went wrong, we'd obviously go and see them. We'd fly back in. But I didn't really have any problems on my first tour with my dog, so we stayed forward for most of it. I was with the infantry almost entirely for that tour, I think. I did a little bit of time with the engineers. But like, I've never really had any problems with any of them. Like, they've always kind of just taken me into the fold, and they're used to having kind of medics and stuff attached as well, so it's not even, the fact I was a woman was never really a drama with any of them either. There was always a bit of banter about chicks and lifting heavy things and all the other nonsense, but as long as you kind of roll with it, it was generally pretty friendly. You know, we're there to do a job as well. You know, they appreciate having a dog. Like, I got on really well with the guys. I spent a bit of time with a Danish call sign when I was in the north of Helmand. They were really good. And weirdly, their chef that they had on camp was a Michelin-starred chef doing his national service. So we had some really cool food made out of 10-man ration packs. So that was a really good posted. But yeah, like, generally, like, the interaction is usually fun and games. It depends on the kind of call sign you're attached to. But on my first tour, certainly, like, the infantry and the paras, they were always generally pretty good with me. And 16 Air Assault and the whole were pretty kind of together as a brigade, and they kind of look after each other pretty well.
After completing her first tour in Afghanistan, Jazz returned to the UK, and she further honed her skills and gained additional qualifications as a military dog handler. But before long, she was called back to Operation Herrick for a second tour, and it would be one that would bring about life-changing consequences for her.
My second tour, when I was out as Arms and Explosive Search, for the product, like, for most of the tours, predominantly with the Danish Special Forces. However, one of those attachments, I had to go and cover another handler that was on R&R. We were being transited between search points, so two different compound locations, in a Warthog. There was no room in the back of the Warthog, so I ended up in the front with the driver and the commander. They'd driven the route a few times that day, which I wasn't used to. Usually, like, they'd take different routes and go in different directions. We went through a river, and at the time I didn't have a helmet on, but as the water sort of came up the windscreen, I was like, probably should put my helmet on. So I bonked that on my head, and just as I sort of bonked it on my head and didn't do up my chin strap, we hit an IED. There was quite a big kind of blast. It blew the rear of the Warthog. It disconnected it, so it blew it kind of off. The front part that we were in, the door came off, and the gunner who was out of the hatch at the time had just disappeared. He was just gone. I sort of came round a little bit. I don't think I was knocked out, but I was definitely kind of dazed a little bit. But I kind of looked around, and Ronnie was missing my dog. And I was like, oh no, something terrible's happened here. And I wasn't really thinking about anything at the time. The driver was hurt. I think he crushed his legs under the steering wheel and stuff, and he was pretty hurt. So they were kind of dealing with him a little bit, checked if I was okay, and as far as I was concerned, I was at the time. I kind of popped out looking for my dog, and he was buzzing around outside, still searching for secondaries all by himself. One of the lads grabbed hold of my dog for me, and one of the medics kind of grabbed me and wanted to chat to me, and I was too busy worrying about my dog. They asked if I was okay to carry on, and I was sort of like, yeah, be fine, be all right. And it wasn't until we got the next vehicle kind of collected us and moved us on, compound we were meant to be going to, and I kind of sat down for about 2 minutes and was like, I feel terrible. And at that point I was like, well, I've gone too far now, and just gonna have to suck it up for a minute, and just carried on with the patrol, got my searches done. And when I got back to Bastion and actually took my body armour and stuff off, I realised I'd actually been hurt. So yeah, had to deal with that for a few weeks afterwards. Luckily it was right near the end of the tour, so I stayed in theatre for a few weeks, about two or three, I think, just kind of helping with kennels and things like that, but was under Bastion Hospital for care. My back was pretty badly damaged, but not anything too serious that needed sending me back to the UK. But when I was on my post-tour leave and stuff, I got looked at by a civvy doctor, and they were like, you shouldn't be wandering around on this. So yeah, I got into the doctors and stuff when I got back from Pottle, and got myself to Headley Court after that, because it turns out I was a bit more broken than I thought I was, but just kind of powered on through it. That ultimately, coupled with a good old dose of PTSD, brought the end of my career. I soldiered on for quite a while and fought my medical discharge pretty hard, so I stayed in. I mean, we came back from tour in 2013. I was discharged from Headley, I think, in late 2015, and I managed to soldier on until 2017. I actually went off sick in the middle of 2016 and then was med discharged from there, because the army basically were like, this is enough now, and I couldn't fight my medical discharge any longer. But ultimately, when I came out, I retired with my dog at the time. She was my little Malinois. And I went into, well, I floated around for a little bit to start with. I didn't really do very much. I helped at some stables and floated around a bit. But then I got into security dog handling, and that's where I spoke to my business partner now, Chris, and asked me if I wanted to do training, which initially I said, no, absolutely not, don't be ridiculous. But he is very persistent and ground me down, and that's when I started the training branch of Otis K9. And so Armatus K9, it was started initially by Chris. He is another military veteran. He was in the Queen's Royal Lancers. It was a security company initially, but he wanted to branch out into training, which is where I got roped into it. So we started up the training side of Armatus K9 in late 2017, early 2018, I believe, where we just began running security courses. We attract, obviously, a lot of veterans because we are veteran ourselves. You know, we try and help them where possible. We initially were based in Corby, and then the name came from a group that we were part of. We were part of the Armatus group. We kind of made the decision that we'd grown enough and we'd added kind of more than just security courses. We were doing explosive detection courses for civilian handlers and drug detection courses for civilian handlers. And we'd grown enough that we kind of bought ourselves out of the group. When that happened, we bought our place, which is a 7-acre training centre. And since that, we've added a full-time trainer to the mix, who deals with pet dogs and behavioural. We buy dogs in to sell as fully trained dogs and supplies to the police and military, as well as still continuing to run our security courses. Somewhere in there, I married my now husband. We met whilst in the vet corps, and he did the same when he came out the military. He did a bit of handling for a while and is now a student vet nurse. I also completed my degree in that time, so I've got a degree in canine behaviour now. Behaviour is kind of where my kind of passion lies. So the future for Armatus, we've recently started working with a cargo search company, so they're known as Fred's Dogs, a free-running explosive detection dog. Predominantly in the UK, that is kind of a market that's nipped up by the great big companies, but a small company has come to us and he is looking to kind of take over that market a little bit, and his business model is actually very good for it. He's so far bought 4 dogs off of us, 3 out of the 4 passed, which is a 75% pass rate, which is far, far better than the big companies have got at the moment. And he's asked to have us on board as the trainers for that, so we're hoping to help him with that. We're also continuing to expand into the handler market more so pushing more kind of event work and more kind of football and stuff like that for detection dogs, especially with Protect Duty now coming in, and kind of making more people aware in the UK that explosive dogs are actually a really valuable asset, and kind of working with counter-terrorism and kind of the government as well to try and raise awareness of explosive dogs. We're working pretty heavily with that at the moment. On a training front, we're continuing to kind of build on our behavioural market predominantly, because it's both where mine and my trainer's, Nadia, is where our kind of passions lie, is working with problematic behaviours. Nadia specifically specialises in German Shepherd dogs, and she works with what I can only describe as an army of German Shepherds at the moment. And I kind of focused more on the other high drive breeds, working breeds predominantly. And kind of as behaviourists in general, we focus on working breeds, even if they're in pet homes. Because a lot of the behaviours we see is that the dogs themselves are bored, basically. They're bred to work and they're not working. So we give owners kind of valuable outlets for those dogs and things. So that's kind of where we're hoping to push things forward more so in the future. So we're not kind of just security, we're more about the dogs on the training front anyway, because that's kind of where our passion lies and we want to do better and we want to help these working breeds, especially at the moment in the UK markets. Predominantly there's so many working breeds in pet homes that, you know, we want to help people and help that to get better and make those dogs' lives better.
With the rapid growth of a new company and the wide range of work it was now doing with working dogs, I couldn't help but ask Jazz if her time in the army had prepared her for the challenges of starting and running a new business.
I'd probably say no, if I'm honest. Kind of the military is a very kind of cornered way of doing things. I think they've changed quite a bit now since I've left, but it was very, especially when I first joined, very, this is how we train a dog. Here's an 89-page manual on how you train this dog. And if it doesn't fit, we get a new dog. My love for training has always been in there, and I've always wanted to work with the dogs that nobody else wants to deal with and the ones that have got little quirks in their behaviour and things like that. And, you know, even as a child, I never had the easy dog that anybody could train. I always had the awkward one because I like to problem solve. From a business perspective, kind of as a security company, obviously my experience as an explosive handler already in the military, it helped with kind of awareness and how I search and how I kind of advise clients and things. And obviously my awareness of devices and how they're placed and how they work. But the civilian sort of sector is very, very different. And it was a bit of a culture shock when I went out, especially as a handler, as a civilian, because I was used to the building was shut down, nobody was in, doors were sealed. We'd search through and then it would be sealed back up. So there was no threat whatsoever of anything getting in behind you. Now we're trying to search through people on ingress and artists on stage warming up and dressing rooms with people in them and things like that. And it's kind of a very different view on things. It can be a little bit scary at times because I've experienced bombs going off, but it's a very different kind of beast. And one thing kind of I wish I'd learned more in the military is kind of variations on training on how to do things differently. I never did any kind of instructing when I was in the military. I was predominantly a handler and trainer. Instructing is kind of a new beast to me, and I do take kind of great pride in my instruction as a civvy and making sure that the dog teams that I put out and the dogs that I put out are as good as they can be, especially explosives work. Like, there's no room for error, in my opinion, in that, because people get hurt. But I like my handlers to be as good as they physically can be and do that job very well and very professionally. But it's a strange old beast, is the civilian market. So yeah, the military, it gave me a lot of experience, but it didn't necessarily set me up for very much. But I equally left as a Lance Corporal. I wasn't very high up because my whole career was focused on training dogs. And if you get to sergeant in the Royal Army Veteran Corps, you drive a desk. And I was never about that life. So that was never the kind of path I was chasing anyway. So yeah, sure, like as the sergeants and things come out, they're probably much better at that kind of angle. And I do think the military in the last few years has kind of progressed a little bit on that front. But yeah, for me, it didn't overly help too much.
Given her deep passion for working dogs, I had to ask Jazz if the path she had taken as a military army dog handler was the right one. Plus, would she recommend the military route for other people who may be interested in a career with working dogs?
I mean, there's easier ways. but yeah, I mean, for me, it was a really, really good path to take. It is a job role within the military. You've got to be very driven and very focused, and you've got to love dogs because we don't get long weekends, we don't get early stacks, we don't get sports afternoon because we've got a live animal to look after, or 50 of them. But if you love your dogs and you want to learn and you want to progress, you certainly will gain the experience for sure. There's obviously civilian routes to go about it, but there's logistics involved. If you're a civilian, you've got to have your own dog, you've got to have your own van. You've got to be prepared to kind of drive up and down the country and do that. But yeah, for me, the military was a really good way to go about it. But you've got to be driven, and especially kind of from a midget female point of view, it's tricky because we work predominantly with the infantry. They're kind of big, strong lads, and we've got to keep up and we've got to show that we can at least do our job well. And, you know, you've got to be fit to a point. I mean, I was never the fittest, never the fastest, never kind of even that interested in being fit, to be honest. But you had to be able to keep up and you had to do what the boys do. But it's always achievable. And I mean, when you're working with the guys, they will help you. Like, nobody's there to kind of screw you over. They want to help you. And, you know, like I said earlier, I've worked with Special Forces Corps Sergeants, I've worked with the SFSG, and I've never ever been made to feel like I'm not good enough to be there. And they've always helped me where I needed help when I'm stuck in an 8-foot ditch because I'm the size of a tiny hobbit.
Clearly, Jazz now has a remarkable future ahead, training working dogs and new dog handlers. But I had to ask her, if she could do it all again, what, if anything, would she change?
I'd probably try to be blown up less, but other than that, not really. I wouldn't change it. Like, how I've gone about it is kind of what I wanted. Like, aimed for something, I drove for it, and I got there. And, you know, some of them are kind of happenstances, and it just kind of fell upon me. I mean, competing at the level I compete at with my dog, that dog I didn't even want, and, you know, I rejected taking him in about 4 times before I folded and took him. Did I think I'd compete at an international level with him? No. Did I think I was going to get over all his quirky little issues? No. But here we are. And I wouldn't be without him now, but I certainly didn't want him when I was offered him first. And, you know, he's done me proud all the way through, much to my husband's dismay, because it meant dog number 6. but yeah, I took him in with the aim of selling him on, and he's still here, so he never went. But yeah, I wouldn't have done anything differently. Like, I enjoyed my time in the military. You know, I'm not bitter about leaving how I left, and I'm not bitter about how I was treated by anybody. Like, you know, the military is the military. You're a cog in a big old machine. Sometimes you're going to get treated a bit like that, you know, a bit below standard sometimes, especially if you're not kind of deployable or you're not, you know, part of the useful machine. But, you know, that's nothing personal. It's just how it is. And nobody's ever kind of done it intentionally, and I've never been kind of given any grief for it. And yeah, like, I loved my time in the military. I would have served on for sure if they had not booted me out. Yeah, I enjoy running my own business as much as everybody goes, oh, you can make your own hours. Yeah, all the hours is your own hours. But it's hard work, but it's worth doing. And it means I get to play with dogs every day. So what's better than that? The sport I compete in with my dog Venom, he's a 3-year-old now, Dutch herder. We compete in a sport called Global Ring, It's one of the ring sports. There's several different ring sports. But global ring consists of competition obedience, retrieving, agility, so jumps, send away, and some biting exercises, the most famous of which is a defensive handler exercise. And it kind of marks us on precision and control, as well as high arousal and speed and things like that. We've trained together for that since he was a baby. I rescued him at 8 weeks old, and when I took him on, I immediately put him to work because he's not a dog that can sit around at all. And we competed our first competition last year in category one, and then this year we've competed three times in category one, and somehow we have managed to qualify for the World Championships, which is going to take place in about 2 weeks' time. So we're hoping to go and hopefully put some really good points on the table and hopefully bring home a British competition podium. I'm not going to be positive enough to have a win, but definitely a podium. I'm hoping that we'll be the first one in the UK to do that, because it's predominantly a European sport with a few of us from the UK competing, but nobody else that I know of from the UK has qualified for the Worlds this year. I think it's just me.
As a nation, we're known worldwide for the love of our dogs. So as my time with Jazz was slowly drawing to a close, I had one final question that I had to ask her. Of all the military dogs she'd trained or worked with, did she have a favourite, and why?
Some of my favourite dogs, like military working dog terms, like Deck, will always hold a special place in my heart. Like that dog, as big of a pain as that creature was, he was a proper old school Springer Spaniel, built like the side of a barn, and really pig-headed, just awkward creature. But he was my first detection dog, and you know, I love a good problem child, and he was the ultimate problem child. He looked after me all the way through my first tour. I made him a promise the day that I left that he'd have a retirement home with me no matter what happened. About 4 months after I came back, he was retired out. He unfortunately didn't get on with his new handler and made that new handler very aware of it, so was brought out of theatre. Fought to rehome him, because with a bite history, they're not meant to be rehomed. But I rehomed him, and he went and lived out his 13 years with my sister down in Cornwall, causing her more trouble by the day. He never gave up. He was always a pain. But she loved him. Like, you know, I was there 10 minutes after he died. I drove from Rotherham all the way down to Cornwall in one big hit, because she said he had to be put down, and I missed him by 10 minutes. But I was there to see him out. My second tour dog, Ronnie, I wasn't quite as close to him as much as he looked after me well. He has a bit of a bland personality, and he was just a bit stupid. But he was a quirky little guy. He was a much smaller spaniel, and definitely crossbred with a sheep, I think. The strangest looking creature I've ever seen in my life. But he was a good little dog, and you know, he looked after me well on my tour. And he went back to the RAF, and we was rehomed out to an RAF handler. And there will only ever be one dog that stays in deep, deep in my heart. I think my whole life is going to be Titch. She was my protection and explosive detection dog. She was a dog that when I was injured and I was selected for that project, she brought me back into dogs and brought me out of a boring job back into dogs. She was a retrain from a high assurance search dog. She was, I think, 5 or 6 when I got her. She was the very first protection and explosives detection dog to be licensed within the army. The first of 6 on the initial project. Really special little dog. I unfortunately lost her November, I think, 2023. But they're probably the main three I remember from my service, certainly. I do still have one military working dog left in my house. My little ginger spaniel is my husband's. He was Public Service Dog of the Year 2017, and he's probably the dumbest creature I've ever met in my life. But I wouldn't be without him either. Little angry Sam. But yeah, my three are kind of the ones that stick out to me. They're the ones that have looked after me, and I owe 3 of them a very great debt, that's for sure.
A couple of weeks after chatting with Jazz, she sent me a message with some exciting news. She, along with her dog Venom, had just competed in the Global Ring World Championships held in the Czech Republic. It was their first year in qualifying and only their 5th competition together. so it's fully understandable they were absolutely thrilled to take home the fifth place in their category. Before we close, I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to Jazz for taking the time to chat with us here at Veterans Voices UK. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in and hearing Jazz's remarkable story. If this episode moved you, I encourage you to explore more episodes here at Veterans Voices UK, where we will continue to share the stories of those who answered the call and served. Remember, they're not just stories about the past, they're a living legacy. By listening, subscribing and sharing the podcast, you help keep these stories alive and ensure our veterans and their experiences are never forgotten. So please subscribe to Veterans Voices UK on your favourite podcast platform, leave us a review and share this episode with anyone who may appreciate Jazz's story. Thank you for being part of our community, and we look forward to having you with us for the next episode. Until then, I'm Matt Lim, and this has been Veterans Voices UK.